As we come tonight to begin the study of the story of Abraham, particularly Abraham's faith, we have to remember that the Bible speaks of Abraham in terms of his being the father of all who have faith. Therefore, a tremendous example of faith. The Bible also speaks of Abraham as being the friend of God. And that is one of the blessings of living a life of faith. You become a friend of God. As I've indicated, the story of Abraham is first of all recorded in the book of Genesis, from the beginning of chapter 12 right through to the end of chapter 24. And if you haven't read the story of Abraham for a long time, I think it would do you a world of good to read it through quickly. There are comments, as I've indicated, on the story of Abraham and Abraham's faith in Acts chapter 7. In Paul's letter to the Romans chapter 4, at the beginning of that chapter and at the end of that chapter, where Paul takes up the story of Abraham in terms of his being an example of a man who was justified by faith. And then we have the Spirit-inspired comment on the life of Abraham here in Hebrews chapter 11 from verse 8 down to verse 19. And we're concerned tonight really only with verses 8, 9, and 10. Now, if you know the story of Abraham at all well, and if you don't, you can rectify it before next Sunday evening by reading these chapters in Genesis. But if you know the story, you will realize that Abraham was, in every sense, a great man. He was a great man in terms of capacity, in terms of service, in terms of prayer. And he was certainly a great man, one of the great figures in what I would call redemption history. He was a great man. Now, great men sometimes demoralize the rest of us rather ordinary characters. But not so in the story of Abraham. Because over against his greatness, and his unquestioned greatness, it is recorded in Scripture that he was a man with significant weaknesses. He was a man who made some very significant failures. He fell into a tremendous snare of sin when he was still a comparatively young man. And then when he was a considerably old man, he fell into the same snare of sin. And he was a man, great though he was, who was at times pressurized by his wife to do what was a contradiction of all that he believed. His wife encouraged him into a certain course of action that was a contradiction of Abraham's desire to be God's man and to be God's servant. So while Abraham's faith may challenge us, the story of Abraham's God encourages us. But here in Hebrews chapter 11, the significant thing that is picked out, the significant fact of Abraham's life, the thing that undergirded his whole life and gave his life direction and power, was his faith. It says in Romans chapter 4, in one of the verses, I forget which verse because we don't need it tonight, that Abraham believed God. Not just that Abraham believed in God, but Abraham believed God, and he took the attitude, well, if God says it, then you can count on it. If God says it, you can depend on it. And as we shall discover next week, when at a very advanced age, and his wife equally advanced in age, God said to this elderly couple, "You're going to have a baby." Well, granted, at first Sarah laughed, but Abraham believed God. And I want you to think about that as we hurry on with the rest of the sermon. And in the course of the coming week, ponder it. This is the life of faith. You believe God. You believe what God has said. You believe the promises of God. And you live your life by them. And Abraham believed God. And having believed God, he was prepared to act upon it. Again, as we shall see next Sunday evening. God had said, through Isaac, there's going to be historic blessing down through the generations. And Abraham believed God. And then God said to Abraham, "Now I want you to sacrifice. I want you to put Isaac to death." Well, I mean, how's there going to be all this genealogy following on down through the year, the generations of descendants, if Isaac was going to be put to death? And Abraham's attitude, well, God has a problem. Abraham didn't have a problem, because he believed what God had said. And believing what God had said, Abraham was prepared to act upon it, even when he did not understand. And in practical terms, as we apply this to ourselves, we've got to see that when Abraham kept his eyes and his heart and his mind fixed upon God, and when Abraham concentrated on what God was saying to him, then faith governed his attitude to life, and faith gave liberty and development to his personality. There are some daft people around, psychologists and psychiatrists and all the rest of them, amongst others, who say that, oh, this business of really give faith in Jesus Christ and discipleship and all that kind of thing, it's going to inhibit your personality. Absolute rubbish. It is the fallenness of human nature that inhibits our personalities. And it is only when we are delivered from that in Jesus Christ that our personalities begin to develop and we begin to become real people. Mind you, it can take a long time, and God's still working in all of us. But we're all improving. Well, I'll say that about you. I hope you'll think about it with regard to me. And when Abraham kept his heart fixed upon God, then it was faith that governed his attitude to life. Faith gave liberty and development to his personality. And faith inspired and empowered the whole of his life, so that increasingly his life became creative and positive, so that this man became a friend of God. Put it like this. Are you friends with God? Now think about it. Or dare I put it like this? He's a great God to have as one of your chums. Ah, but you'll never become familiar. You'll never forget that he's the high and lofty one who inhabits eternity. Oh, but to be a friend of somebody like that. You see, friends trust each other. And friends speak to each other. And that was the pattern. And that was the blessing of Abraham's life of faith. And it, as the story makes plain, you read it for yourself. It was only when Abraham held back from going with God that his life was denied fulfillment and the weaker parts of his personality came into operation, with disastrous results for himself and his family and the work to which God had called him. But it is the positive side of Abraham's life, his faith, that is our concern tonight here in Hebrews chapter 11. And the picture in these verses 8, 9, and 10, and really further on, the picture is comprehensive, it is instructive, and it is encouraging. It's the kind of picture that says, now you be like this, because this is the kind of life that pleases God. But now I've got to repeat what I've been saying on previous Sunday evenings. Faith does not operate in a vacuum. Faith is essentially and is always the response to what God has said. And God is always speaking. But you know, there are a lot of people who come to church Sunday morning and Sunday evening, Sunday after Sunday, and they never really expect God to say anything to them. And of course, if you don't expect, you're not likely to hear. God is always speaking. And faith is our response to what God is saying to us. And that means, and we've said it already in different terms on a previous Sunday evening, that means that faith is not a leap in the dark. Faith is essentially turning to the light. It is unbelief that is a step in the dark. Because in unbelief, if we do not believe what God says to us, and if we do not respond in faith to what God says to us, then we are living our lives based upon unbelief. And in unbelief, you go on your own into what is unknown. And that prospect really frightens me. And when we leave out God and what God is saying to us, we really turn our backs on the light. And when you turn your back on the light, you become a shadow on your own path. And that's something to think about. I've told you before, I tell you again, and this is going back to my student days, and that's a fair distance back, sitting in the little village of Gardenstown, the church there, one Sunday evening, and my brother preaching from one of the Psalms, is it Psalm 36, I can't quite remember, taking as the significant text, "In thy light shall we see light." It was a sermon on backsliding. And how when we backslide from God, when we turn our backs upon the light that God is shining upon us, we become a shadow upon our own path and we cannot see. One of the tremendous problems about dealing pastorally with backsliders is that they refuse to believe that they're backsliding. They cannot see it. They are not aware of it. Because you see, in unbelief they have turned away from God and they're casting a shadow on their own life. Now put it like this, it's very practical. If your life is unclear, if you don't seem to be getting anywhere, if you begin to wonder why your longings and why your prayers are not being answered, then I suggest what you have to do is to turn around and look to God, and to listen to God, and to go with God. And then you will be surprised, as Abraham was surprised, what your life can become. There's a hymn that has the line in it, "Blind unbelief is sure to err." Now consider, as time allows us, and we've learned, I hope we've learned a lot tonight already. I learned a lot preparing this sermon. I've had the lessons confirmed to me so far in the sermon because I listen as well as preach. So we've learned a lot. Now let us learn more as time allows as we consider verses 8, 9 and 10 of Hebrews chapter 11. By faith, Abraham obeyed. It's the trouble with faith, you know, it's terribly practical. It interferes with your life. By faith, Abraham obeyed, and he obeyed when he was called. There's nothing presumptuous about it. When he was called to go out to a place which he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was to go. It's an astonishing verse. If you had been with Abraham in Ur of the Chaldees, what would you have said to him? You might say, Abraham, what on earth are you doing that for? Abraham, do you know what you're doing? And he would have had to say, well, not really. Then why are you doing? God has spoken to me. And he went when he was called. Now notice, God spoke to him. Now you know as well as I do that all sorts of people who are sometimes mentally ill or psychologically ill tend to say that, oh, God spoke to them and told them to do this, and some people say that God spoke to them and told them to do the most horrendous things. But then you see, it is what follows that shows or proves whether it was God or not who was speaking. Now, God spoke to Abraham. And you may well say, well, how did God speak? Well, in the historical narrative, away back in Genesis chapter 12, I'll read the first three verses to you. The Lord said to Abraham, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you, and I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who curses you I will curse. And by you, or in you, or through you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. And I wouldn't have blamed Abraham if Abraham said, who, me? I think we sometimes should be surprised when God gives indication of what he's planning to do with us. Well, but you say that doesn't enlighten things a great deal, preacher. It just, yes, you read what God said to Abraham, but how did he speak? Well, you remember we read in Acts chapter 7. And in a sense, this isn't going to explain it any further. It says, the God of glory appeared to Abraham. Oh, you see, if the God of glory appeared, oh, what faith. Just be careful. The God of glory appeared to Abraham. In what way did the God of glory appear to Abraham? We assume that it must have been something absolutely marvelous, out of this world. Well, it may have been, but I don't know. But I do know, because the Bible tells me so, that the God of glory appeared to Moses. And that made Moses scratch his head, because it was a burning bush out in the desert. And the bush didn't burn down. It was bone dry, it was burning, but it didn't burn away. The God of glory appeared to Moses. The God of glory appeared to Saul of Tarsus on the road to Damascus, and that really shook him. It knocked him off his feet. But then you see, the Bible tells me so, the God of glory spoke to Elijah the prophet. Not in the thunder, not in the wind, not in the fire, but in a still, small voice. I know a man who had planned for himself a considerable business career. And then there seemed to be this, dare I say, this wretched little voice that began to say, "What about the ministry?" It was such a quiet voice that I didn't take any notice. So it said it again. And God kept on saying it for the best part of 2 years. On some levels, you know, I'm very slow on the uptake. But God spoke. Now, I've no doubt at all that the reason why I'm in the ministry is that God said, the ministry. So you see, God, we sing sometimes in the hymn, God moves in a mysterious way. That's true. God has an immense variety of ways of speaking to us. Do you never sometimes find yourself belting out the words of a hymn that you like and a tune that you like, and then suddenly maybe a phrase in the middle of one of the verses, and then you're like, oh, whoops! Does that mean me? Oh, God speaks. And God spoke to Abraham. The God of glory appeared to Abraham. And this happened to Abraham when he was a significant person, not least in the business world and the cultural world, in Mesopotamia, in the city of Ur of the Chaldees, which the dictionaries and encyclopedias tell me was an absolutely magnificent place. It was a place of pagan culture. It was an idolatrous place. And I find myself saying, well, what influences operated in the experience of Abraham that made him become persuaded that God was saying to him to get up, gather his belongings, leave that great city for an unknown future? Well, the only explanation is the explanation I gave at the end of the brief Bible study last evening in the prayer meeting. I believe in the Holy Spirit. I really do. And in that vast city of culture, this man and his family, surrounded by so much that we would say signified a successful man with his present and his future guaranteed and all his family, his relatives provided for. And God said, I want you to leave it all. And by faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place which he was to receive from God as an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was to go. I've suggested already in the sermon, I've only got found it in my notes now, what did his friends say? What did his colleagues say? How did they react at this rather radical attitude to God? Do the people that you live with and work with and spend your recreation time with, are they aware that you have a radical attitude to God? Oh, you say, Mr. Philip, I'm not so radical as... Does that mean you're an unbeliever? Oh, no, you say, oh, I'm not an... Are you halfway between the two? There's a bit of you wants to look to God and find in him the life that he can give you. There's another bit in you that wants to go the way of the world. Remember the verse in the book of Revelation where God said to some people in a certain church, you are neither hot nor cold. And the language of the Bible can be very blunt at times. Because you're neither hot nor cold, I'll spew you out of my mouth, says God. Did Abraham's colleagues mock him? Did they try to stop him? Did they accuse him of extremism? I don't know. I know the kind of thing that happens now when people in the world take a real stand for Jesus Christ. Did his friends and colleagues say, "Where are you going?" I don't know. I should imagine they would. And all that Abraham could say is, I don't know where I'm going. God has promised me a place, and God has promised me an inheritance, and God has promised me to be with me and to bless me. But then you see, it's really very wonderful faith. Abraham had no examples to follow. The earlier chapters in Genesis, you build up to the story of the Tower of Babel. Yes, I know there had been Abel and Enoch and Noah in the past. But now, you see, society had built up to the Tower of Babel and to a godless unbelief that was rejecting God and excluding God from the whole of society. It was a world of confusion, a world of anti-God spirit. Abraham had no examples to follow. You have, and I had. There were times that I looked at some Christians and thought, oh, I'd like to be like them. As far as I know, in Abraham's time, there were no prophets. There was no ministry. Abraham had no prayer partners. How would you feel if God called you to go to some completely untested area of the mission field and to go without a home church and without a single person who had promised to pray for you? Oh, yes, I wouldn't. No, well, I wouldn't like that either. When I went into the ministry, I knew that I had a home congregation that would pray for me. And they've prayed for me for over 40 years, and they're still praying for me. Well, I hope they think I've improved a bit, but they pray on. But Abraham had none of that. He went out not knowing where he was going. He went out not knowing what was going to be involved. He went not knowing what demands would be made of him. He went out not knowing what reward would be his, except for the promise of God of an inheritance to come. But then you see, when you believe God, you go with God. And going with God, you get in full measure what God has planned and prepared for you. And you discover, and it astonishes you, you discover that God has made you part of his plan, the outworking of his plan for the whole of world history. And if that doesn't at least kindle in your heart some desire to believe God and to live the life of faith, I think you must be very dead. But the verse goes on in verse 9. By faith he sojourned in the land of promise as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. You see, Abraham's faith and his life of faith was a long-term commitment. He went out to live the life of faith in obedience to God. And he lived that life of faith for a great many years until his son Isaac was born. And he lived on after that until his grandson Jacob was born. And he lived his life of faith until his grandson was 16 or 18 years of age. He simply went on and on and on and on. And in doing so, Abraham set in motion something that was going to go on from generation to generation. But all the time, he sojourned, and I really mean, you're a lodger. You don't belong if you're a lodger. You can't call the place your. Oh, you say, oh, I've got a lovely room. And there are students sometimes who get lovely rooms. The landlord usually makes you pay the earth for rent, but you can never call it yours. Well, Abraham never had a place of his own for a long time. Oh, you say, isn't there a verse in the Bible about Jesus, the Son of God? He had no place to lay his head. And he had no worries about a mortgage either. When I read this verse, by faith he sojourned in the land of promise as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob. My mind went straight away back to the old Sankey hymn, "This world is not my home, I'm just a passing through." That's true, you know. When we go down eventually to verse 13, you find there that Abraham and those like him acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles, or strangers and pilgrims. And the reference in our verse 10 about tents, or verse 9 about tents, is something that portrays a tremendous contrast to the mansion that Abraham no doubt lived in the glorious city of Ur of the Chaldees. But you know, he didn't feel that he had lost out, because he never wanted to go back. This reference to tents, I think, is an indication that in his life of faith, and keep in mind that God is not a Scrooge. He doesn't bless his children unwillingly. He's not parsimonious. The Bible speaks in various places about God's open-handedness. But Abraham, this bit about the tents, indicates that Abraham, in his attitude of faith, was not prepared to allow the world and all the things in the world, the good things as well as the bad things, he was not prepared to allow the world either to trap him or to anchor him in his life of faith and discipleship and service. I'm very grateful for a lot of the old hymns, and I feel very sad that they want to exclude so many of them from future hymn books. The hymn that says, "Tell me the old, old story, when you have cause to fear that this world's empty glory is costing me too dear." Sometimes I have to say to people, "My friend, your career is taking you away from God." Sometimes I have to say to people, "Your romance is taking you away from God." Sometimes I have to say to people, "Your preoccupation with your children is coming between you and your obedience of faith in relation to God." Sometimes I have to say to people, "Your love of pleasure is getting between you and your God." Isn't there a verse in the Bible that describes some people as lovers of pleasures rather than lovers of God? I thought of these things and turned over a page in my Bible to Hebrews chapter 12 at verse 16, where the word of God is saying, now you be careful that none of you be immoral or irreligious like Esau, who sold his spiritual birthright for a single meal, for one spell of human satisfaction. He sold his spiritual birthright. And you know that afterwards, when he would have given anything to get that spiritual blessing back, he couldn't find the way. It's clear from the story in Genesis that Abraham was a wealthy man, a man of business skill, an influential man in society, a man of possessions, but these weren't his security, because all these can go in a moment. Health, houses, pension funds. Think of all these poor souls with the Barlow clothes, a fraud. They thought they had provided for years. And then one day in the papers they were told, it's all gone. Do you remember the story that Jesus told about the businessman who got on so well that he had to build barns to store away all his wealth, and he had to build more barns? And he said, now my soul, I've done a good job for you, my soul. Take your ease now. Take early retirement and enjoy the rest of your days. And God said, oh, you foolish man, this night your soul will be required of you. My dear people, if it was for you and for me, would we be ready? Or would we have all sorts of regrets because there was so much that we meant to be and to do in our Christian lives? By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called. By faith, he sojourned in the land of promise, sojourning in tents. Verse 10, by faith he looked forward to the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Oh, I had a big struggle to know which hymns to choose for tonight. I had thought of the one that said, Savior, if of Zion's city I through grace a member am, let the world deride or pity, I will glory in thy name. But we haven't chosen it. By faith, he looked forward. Not just when he was young, but right through till he was an old man, and he was still looking forward because he believed that the best was yet to be. You know, I must stop. For a great many people, as time goes past and as they grow older, their enthusiasm for the things of God weakens. Their faith gets more and more feeble. The eagerness that marked their early Christian life and discipleship seems to just evaporate away. And all that we mean by going on with God and being right with God and putting God first in our lives and our service of God, all that, oh, how easily it can slip into the background. And almost without our noticing it, we become like unbelieving worldly people living for the here and now. It wasn't that with Abraham. He looked forward to the city. The city that has foundation, whose builder and maker is God. It's all about a place of habitation and of life and activity and community. The builder and maker is God. It's planned by God. It's created by God. It's not the result of human achievement. It has foundations, which means it is stable and dependable and changeless. And if you want a description of it, read Revelation chapters 21 and 22. I'm telling you to read an awful lot of the Bible tonight, aren't I? It won't do you any harm. God's eternal city. Oh, what a picture it is. Yes, I was reading it this afternoon. Oh, there's a picture there of the river of life. There's a picture there of grandeur of life that almost defies even my imagination. There's a picture there of the very throne of God. And there's the indication there that God himself is there. I remember a man, a godly man, speaking when his godly mother had died. And he was speaking of the comfort and encouragement that he had by thinking of the gathering of the saints in glory. Do you ever think about that? What a place it must be. God's eternal city. And by faith, Abraham looked forward to the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Oh, you see, here's Abraham's life of faith. He was a man who knew. He was going places with God. And he was sure of getting there. But on the other hand, you see, when we leave out God, our life gets less and less and ends up with nothing to look forward to. But when you go with God, you have a future. Be like Abraham. Have faith in God. And I tell you, you will find life and you'll never lose it. Amen, and may God bless to us his word.